ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय हरिर्हि निर्गुणः साक्षात् पुरुष प्रकृते परः स सर्वदृग् उपाद्रष्टा ठं भजन् निर्गुणो भवेत् हरिर्हि निर्गुणः साक्षात् पुरुष प्रकृते परः स सर्वदृग् उपद्रष्टा ठं भजन् निर्गुणे भवे निर्गुणो भवेत् हरिर्हि निर्गुणः साक्षात् पुरुष प्रकृते परः स सर्वदृग् उपाद्रष्टा ठं भजन् निर्गुणो भवेत्
Hari, the Supreme Lord Hari, He, indeed, Nirguna, untouched by the material modes, Sakshad, absolutely, Purusha, the personality of Godhead, Prakrite, to material nature, para, transcendental, sa, he,
Sarva,
everything.
Drik,
seeing.
Upadrashta,
the witness.
Tam,
him.
Bhajan,
by worshipping.
Nirguna,
free from the material modes.
Bhavet,
one becomes.
Lord Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-seeing eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships him becomes similarly free from the material modes. Purport. Lord Vishnu is situated in his own transcendental position, beyond the material energy. Why, therefore, should his worship bear the fruit of material opulence? The real fruit of worshiping Lord Vishnu is transcendental knowledge. Thus, Lord Vishnu's worshiper gains the eye of transcendental knowledge instead of being blinded by mundane assets. The Lord, being the detached witness of the material creation, his devotee also becomes aloof from the interaction of the Lord's inferior energies. Srila Sridhar Swami cites the following passage from the Vedic literature.
Vastuno gunasambandhe rupadvayam iheshyate tadharma yoga yoga bhyam bimbavat pratibimbavat.
When the absolute reality associates with the modes of nature, he assumes two different kinds of form in this world, according to whether his spiritual qualities are manifest or not. Thus he acts just like a reflection, and it is its further secondary reflection.
Guna sattva daya shanta ghora mudha swabhavataha Vishnu Brahma Shivanam cha guna yantra swarupinam.
The modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, whose individual natures are peaceful, violent, and foolish, are personally regulated by Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, respectively.
Nati bedho bhavet bedo guna dharmaya iham shataha sattvasya santya no jatu vishnur vikshepa mudhate.
Lord Vishnu's peaceful mode of goodness does not differ substantially from his original spiritual qualities, although it is only a partial manifestation of them within this world. Thus, Lord Vishnu's mode of goodness is never tainted by agitation in passion or delusion in ignorance.
Rajas tamo gunabhyam tu bhavetam brahmarudrayo guno pamardato bhuyas tat amshaman chabinata.
By the modes of passion and ignorance, on the other hand, the original spiritual qualities of Lord Brahma and Lord Rudra are obscured. Thus, these spiritual qualities appear only partially as separated material qualities.
Atha samagra sattvasya vishnor moksha hari mati amsato bhuti hetuscha tatananda mayi stavaha.
Therefore, focusing one's consciousness upon Lord Vishnu, the embodiment of all goodness, leads one to liberation. Such God consciousness also generates material success as a byproduct, but its proper nature is pure spiritual ecstasy. Amshatas taratamyena brahmarudradi sevanam vibhutayo bhavantyeva shanairamoksho pyanam shataha. According to their mode of worship, devotees of Brahma, Rudra, and other demigods obtain the limited success of material opulences. Eventually, they may possibly become qualified for full liberation. This same idea is echoed in the following statement of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sriyamsi tatra kalu satvatanor nirnam suhu. Of these three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness.
Om Agyan Timidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurumilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yudha Patakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajataham Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Dalita Sri Vishakambitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kansana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Hare
Hare Krishna This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 88, entitled Lord Shiva Saved from Brakasura. Text number 5. In the previous chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami, in his teachings to Parikshit Maharaj, explained what is the ultimate goal of all the Vedas. He narrated a story that happened at the time when Mahavishnu was just exhaling, before all the universes or all living beings were manifested. The Vedas came from his breath. In our experience of life, as far as our existence within this world, our breath is very dear. It's very intimate. It's the closest thing to us. We can't live without breathing. We can't think without breathing. We take it for granted. Every single breath we take is sustaining our body and our mind within this earthly existence. And yet we're breathing all the time. Sometimes we're breathing fast, sometimes slow, sometimes in the middle. Sometimes we're breathing very softly. Some people at night breathe very loud. But everyone's breathing. So breath is life. And the origin of all life within the cosmic creation is Krishna's breathing. Mahavishnu was laying in the Karana ocean, the causal ocean, and he breathes. And the first thing that manifests from his breath are the Vedas. His compassion. Those who want to try to find happiness, pleasure, by being controller, proprietor, and enjoyer, by separating their natural, loving relationship from him. Krishna, by his external energy, the Bahiranga Shakti, he covers us over, and we forget who we really are. And like a dream, we identify with these external designations and think that our real happiness, our real peace, is through the interaction of the body, the mind, caused by the ego, with our environment, material environment. So the cosmic creation is a facility, as Srila Prabhupada explains, for love to be perfect there must be freedom. The freedom not to love. If we were programmed like a computer or forced like a slave to serve Krishna, that would not be perfect love. But Krishna gives us freedom so that when we wake up to what our real purpose, our true nature is, then we experience the highest, fullest, most perfect experience of love. And in that love, we give the highest, most personal experience to to our beloved, to Krishna. So before everything else in creation, the Vedas are manifest from Krishna's breath, his very life breath. His life breath is his compassion to all living beings. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyam. Krishna manifests this world and he comes again again in this world because of his love for us, his compassion. Not only does he come in various incarnations, but he resides right beside every soul as the Paramatma. He's living right in our very heart. In whatever species, due to our karma, we may dwell in. If we act so immorally, we cast into the body of a scorpion, or a snake, or a bacteria. Krishna is so kind, he comes with us there also. Every living being is animated from him. He is the father, the protector, the guide of everyone. That is Krishna in our heart. If we can just grasp that idea, how grateful we will be, how indebted we will be. Such unconditional love. Spiritual world, Krishna is always manifesting his transcendental form. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigra, which is the cause of all causes, and his personality, his qualities, the sweet sound of his flute. Srila Prabhupada writes, Vrindavan is such a wonderful place because everyone is there. Their constant companion is the beautiful sound of Krishna's flute. Well, in the spiritual world, Krishna is performing lila, pastimes, with everyone forever. And even when we reject him, whether we're bacterias, whether we're fishes or trees or plants, fragrant or poisonous, whether we're birds or all varieties of reptiles or animals. Very sweet, loving, lotus-eyed cows, or tigers, or hogs, or whatever particular class, designation, or nation. Our nation were born in as human beings or even demigods. Krishna is always with us. The Upanishads describe it that like two birds in a single tree. One bird is trying to find pleasure. Just has to find pleasure. The pleasure of satisfying his hunger, his taste. He's always looking for fruits to eat. Sometimes those fruits are sweet and sometimes bitter. Sometimes he enjoys and sometimes he suffers. But there's another bird beside him that never leaves him. He's just watching. Just waiting for that moment, whenever it may be, for the little bird to turn to him. And then Krishna is willing to give himself completely. Direction of how to know him and how to love him. That is the reality that is forever for every one of us. And Krishna, who is Rasa Bihari, he intimately knows each of us. Sometimes when we're in a situation with big crowds, we feel kind of alienated. Because there's just so many people. How to deal with them all? Yes? But Krishna, just like he was living in 16,108 palaces in Dwarka with his queen simultaneously. While sitting on bank of Yamuna, he was gazing upon each one of his limitless cowherd boys, gopas, while honoring prasad. He could simultaneously take the prasad of each cowherd boy. And he didn't manifest thousands of arms or thousands of mouths. Each cowherd boy is just seeing, he's just eating my laddu. Another boy, he's only eating my samosa. Another boy, he's only eating my malpura. And he's happy and he's smiling at each one. It's so nice. And with gopis, he could be dancing with limitless gopis in the moonlight. And each gopi is thinking, he loves all these gopis so much, but he's so merciful, he's so kind, he's only with me. That is how Krishna exchanges his love with those who love him. And for the rest of us, as the Paramatma, he's specially there just for you. Sometimes when there's large volumes of people, things get impersonal. And that's a challenge. When things are very just a few people, then there's natural, everyone knows each other and everyone is discussing with each other and everyone is concerned for each other. But when the volume of people grow big, then, you know, what's happening? Sometimes I hear from our older devotees, I come to Srimad Bhagavatam class at Radha Gopinath temple. It used to be everyone absolutely intimately knew everyone. But now, 85% of the people, this is what I hear, I don't even know who they are. But Krishna, for all the limitless living beings in the spiritual world and all for the countless living beings in this material creation, of all universes, of all planets, of all species. He's there, the Paramatma is there just for you. Now, if we don't behave properly, that's scary. But if we behave properly, it's really wonderful. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he offered that beautiful, when he heard the prayer of Mukunda Dutt, he was singing a verse that was spoken by Uddhava from the Srimad Bhagavatam. That Krishna, he's so kind that when Kamsa sent Putana, who was really a murderer, she was killing babies. How many babies? We don't even know. She was killing them and eating their flesh and drinking their blood. And she tried to do that to Krishna when he was just born. She came with the intent purpose of murdering him and eating him. When he was in such a helpless state as a little baby. It's not fair. Kshatriyas, they like to fight people of equal strength. But here's Putana. She had a giant form, 8 miles. And not only that, but she had mystic cities. So powerful. And she was killing helpless little infant babies for her sense gratification and for the sense gratification of Kamsa to alleviate his fear. Kamsa is a spirit soul, a part and parcel of Krishna, who's naturally, eternally meant to love Krishna. And what is the quality of one who loves Krishna? Pandita Samadarshana. We see the spiritual part of Krishna in every heart. But yet, she's this monstrous Rakshashi. Is killing infant babies. And Kamsa, because of fear, he ordained, if any of these little babies could possibly be of Krishna, we'll kill them. Doesn't matter if tens and thousands, hundreds of thousands of the wrong ones are killed. That's what fear does to a person. Potentially. And yet, Uddhava is expressing, he gave Putana the liberation of being his own mother in this spiritual world. How forgiving he is to anyone who sincerely makes contact with him. Who else can I worship but Krishna? That's truly the expression of deep humility. Who else can I worship but Krishna? In other words, Uddhava is Krishna's best friend from Dwarka. But yet, when he saw the gopis and the gopas' love for Krishna in Vrindavan, he prayed, let me just be a gulmalata, just a little plant, a little piece of grass in Brajbhumi near Govardhan, so that the gopis and the gopas will, and the cows, they will step on my head with their hooves or their feet. and he felt unworthy to even ask for that. Haridas Thakur, when he was offered any benediction by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Satprahara Leela, the Mahaprakash, he could have asked for anything. He asked, "Let me just be an insect or an animal close to the house of your devotees, so that after they eat their food, when they throw their plates out," because they use leaf plates in Bengal, "then I will be able to take their Maha Maha Prasad. I will be able to experience your devotees' love by eating their remnants." And Haridas, after saying that, he became deeply embarrassed. "Who am I to be asking for such an exalted position of getting the remnants of the food of your devotees? How shameless I am to even ask for such a thing." So this is the mood of a Vaishnava. When we're humble, we could be grateful. When we're grateful, we could receive mercy. Mercy is there, everywhere, for everyone. But we can't really receive it or absorb it without that humility and that gratitude. So without that humility and gratitude, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, who has taught all of us through our parampara, then no amount of sacrifice, tapasya, accumulation of knowledge, even scriptural knowledge, will bring about a real transformation in our hearts. So Parikshit Maharaj is being told by Sukadev Goswami that the Vedas personified and they offer beautiful prayers. And in their prayers they express what is the ultimate goal of life. Not attaining higher and higher material pleasures, either in this world or in the heavenly worlds. The goal of life is not achieving mystics' miraculous powers, where we can actually really appear to everyone around us to be godly controllers. Not even liberation, the total peace of never suffering again. The ultimate goal of life is loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is established. Personified Vedas explain. Who knows the conclusion of the Vedas better than the Vedas? We can have so many opinions. In every scripture, in every spiritual path, there's so many interpretations of what it really means. And there's always divisions and there's always conflict. And due to those divisions, the very scriptures that are supposed to rise us above envy, our interpretations increase our envy, increase our hate, even increase our arrogance. Opposite effect. It happens. It's happened throughout history. But here the Vedas themselves are speaking. Each one, each Veda, primary Veda, is explaining the ultimate purpose and goal in their prayers to Lord Vishnu. So after hearing this, Parikshit Maharaj, in this particular chapter we're reading from, he's inquiring from Sukadev Goswami. You've established what the goal is. The goal is Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Shada Pashyanti Surya. To always remember Vishnu, to never forget him, to surrender. Sarva Dharman Padityaja Mame Kam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papi Vyo Moksha Ishami Masaja. To surrender to Krishna. It's the goal. But why is it that Vishnu is like he is? And he presented what appears to be a contradiction. Lord Shiva, he is such a transcendental personality. He does not have a house to live in Kailash. He doesn't even have a straw hut in the snow. He doesn't even have a snow house. He lives under a tree. And what are his clothes? He doesn't wear any jewelry. He wears snakes. He doesn't put fine-scented sandalwood oil upon his body. He puts ashes from crematoriums sometimes. He doesn't have finely combed hair. He has matted locks. And yet, his devotees, they have such luxurious lives. We see very easily he gives wealth to his devotees. They get powers. And with their powers, they get luxury, they get opulence, they get so much material acquisition. And Vishnu, he's the husband of the goddess of fortune. He's living in magnificent palaces. He has the most finely combed hair. His body is anointed with celestial fragrances. He wears fine silks, beautiful jewels, including the Kostubha Mani. And yet, his devotees, we see, are sometimes so poor. They hardly have anything. Why is this? This is a contradiction. Apparently, Shiva has nothing, and he gives everything material. Vishnu has everything, and sometimes he takes everything away. Shukadev Goswami is explaining. Shukadev Goswami himself, he was Atma Ramash Chamunaya Nirgrantya Apyarukrame. He was completely liberated soul. He had fully realized the Brahman, the all-pervading supreme nature of the absolute truth. But when he heard the beautiful narration of Krishna's pastimes, he gave up that Brahman realization to hear more about Krishna from his father Vyasadeva. Rupa Goswami declares that compared to the limitless ocean of the happiness in feeling Krishna's love and serving Krishna with love. Even the Brahmananda, the happiness, the ecstasy of Brahman, is not even a drop compared to the ocean of prema. So here Sukadeva Goswami surrenders his life, his soul, his everything to Krishna, the ultimate source of Vishnu, the husband of Lakshmi. And it's not that Sukadeva Goswami is doing puja to increase his business. He's the topmost devotee of Lakshminath. And he doesn't have a house. He could eat the finest foods if he wanted, but he just goes to, in the morning when a cowherd man is just about to milk a cow, he comes and gets a little milk. He sleeps in the ground. He doesn't wear any clothes. And Parikshit Maharaj was the great king of the whole world. And yet he's humbling himself to Sukadeva Goswami. He could have humbled himself to a guru who's sitting on a big throne and everything like that. But he humbles himself and surrenders to Sukadeva Goswami, the king of the world. Because Parikshit Maharaj knew what real wealth is. It's not material acquisition. It's detachment from material acquisition. Param Drishvani Vartate. That is based on that higher taste of inner happiness, of connecting with Krishna, of surrendering to Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami tells how Lord Shiva, we have just read in this purport, he is the Lord of material nature. As Brahma Samhita declares, Shiva is an expansion of Vishnu. And he's especially, as Vishwanath, he's the Lord of material creation. The three modes of nature are under his control. His consort is Durga, the goddess who is overseeing everything of the cosmos. And everything within the cosmos is born of the false ego, Ahankar. And Sukadeva Goswami explains how from the Ahankar comes 16 elements. The mind, and then the five knowledge-acquiring senses, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and the skin, the five working senses, the hands, the feet, the voice, the genitals and the anus, the five material elements, the earth, water, fire, air, ether. They're all born of the ego. Lord Shiva, he is the controller. And as a demigod, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they're presiding over passion and ignorance. They are obliged to fulfill the requests of those who perform the proper worship of them. But within the context of the creation, Lord Vishnu is predominating over the mode of goodness, pure goodness, Sudasattva. Sudasattva is the spiritual state. It's goodness without any tinges of passion or ignorance. When we come to the platform of the mode of goodness, we can actually enter into the realm of pure goodness, which is that transcendental state. But Lord Vishnu, he's independent. Shukadeva Goswami explains how demigods, even demons, what to speak of pious people, when they worship Brahma or Shiva, they get what they ask for in due course of time. Relatively quickly also. Even if they ask for something that is not ultimately good for them, they will get it. But Vishnu, even if you worship him for millions of births, if you ask for something that's not good for you, he may not give it at all. In fact, he may give you the opposite. Or he might take everything away from you. And therefore, he explains that materialistic people who want a lot of material things usually don't come to Vishnu. Because in today's world, we don't know that much about all these things. But previously, people really knew about these things. They knew if they really want material, luxurious life, it's a big risk to go to Vishnu. Because he's going to give me what I need. There's a saying among traditional people in Bengal that throughout life you worship Kali or Durga for material benefits, but at the time of death you should chant the names of Vishnu. Ravana worshipped Shiva. He performed huge austerities to get Shiva's mercy. And then, after he got all these powers from Shiva, Ravana went and tried to take away Kailash, the abode of Shiva. Such gratitude. He took away the Pushpaka from his own brother, Kuvera. Because the nature of when we get these strength and wealth and power and fame, they make us proud. And the tendency of pride is it blinds us to our real self-interest. When we become proud, we can't be grateful. Ravana was offering incredible prayers of submission to Lord Shiva, but then as soon as he got what he wanted, he became so blinded with pride, he wanted to take away what was Shiva's. Hiranyakashipu worshipped Brahma with such intensity He did so many tapasyas. And eventually, when Brahma appeared to him, he offered wonderful prayers of glorification. But then when he got his powers, he became so blinded by arrogance. He was exploiting Brahma's children. And he wanted to exploit even the position of Brahma. He wanted a post even higher than Brahma. Because Brahma dies after 311 trillion years. But Hiranyakashipu wanted to become immortal. And Indra, Vayu, Chandra, Agni, they're all very dear, beloved children and servants of Brahma. And what could be worse than exploiting the child of someone? He didn't have the power at that time to take Brahma's position. But all those who were most dear and close to Brahma, he was stealing everything away from. He was terrorizing them. He was murdering Brahmins, who are the most trusted representatives of Brahma. That's what this intoxication does. Banasura. Bana was a devotee of Shiva. And he did tremendous tapasya. And he satisfied Shiva in so many ways. He knew Shiva liked to dance. So he played drums with 1,000 arms. Could you imagine? Sometimes our devotees at Radha Gopinath Temple, they think they're heroic when they play the drum very loud. But Banasura, could you imagine how loud? Shiva didn't even need earplugs. Because he's such a transcendental person above the modes of material nature. He was dancing to every beat. Every beat that Banasura was doing with all his 1,000 arms, Shiva was reciprocating. What would you like? So he gave Banasura the benediction that he could conquer, that he would be very strong. And once he makes a promise, he has to keep his promise. So Banasura attacked Krishna. And because he attacked Krishna, Shiva was obliged to fight against Krishna, to protect him. And he did. There's a beautiful story in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat that describes, after this narration from Srimad Bhagavatam, where Shiva is fighting with all his strength against Krishna, because it was the promise he gave to his devotee, he would protect him, Banasura. And then after he's defeated, he's praying, please forgive me. And Lord Krishna says, no one is more worse enemy than you. I give you everything and then you just to side with your demoniac devotee, you attack me? Shiva said, now, I don't want to associate with demons, I want to be with your devotees. So he said, oh, then you can be close to me as Lord Jagannath and live in Bhuvaneshwar. as Sukadev Goswami is telling these wonderful stories, kamaistaistar hrittagyana prapadyante nyadevata tam tam niyamamashtaya prakritya tyanasvaya, that people with less intelligence, they worship the demigods for material benefits, not knowing that they're temporary. Devarshi bhutaptinir nam pitrinam nakinkaro nayamanini charajam saravatmana yasharanam sharanyam gatomukundam paritityakaratam. But one who worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, it's like watering the root of a tree. That water goes to every part of the tree, the flowers, twigs, trunk. Similarly, when we worship Krishna, who is the source of the root of all existence, aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvata. He's the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from Krishna. The wise who know this perfectly worship me, Krishna says, with all their hearts. When we worship Krishna with sincerity, then we have totally fulfilled all obligations to every single one of the demigods. And there are so many demigods, and we're obliged to so many. To our forefathers, to the sages and to the rishis, every responsibility is fulfilled when we honestly and sincerely worship Krishna. But if we actually sincerely worship Krishna, factually in our life we become the servant of everyone. Aham Bhita, Bhita, presented with the thing as Krishna's child who Krishna loves. When we worship Krishna's devotees and when we're compassionate to all others, that's the best way of worshiping the Lord. So we can't separate compassion to others from our service to Krishna. And when we worship Krishna in that way, which awakens especially when we hear about Krishna, when we chant the names of Krishna, when we associate with the devotees of Krishna, that we have no debt to anyone, either in the past, in the present, or in the future. But Krishna says, sarva dharma antaritya, abandon all dharma and just surrender to me. When we please Krishna, we have fulfilled all our obligations. The concept of Daivi Varnashram is we must fulfill our obligations in this world. We cannot neglect them. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna wanted to run from his obligation of fighting. Krishna said, that is sarva dharman parityaja, doesn't mean you run away from your dharma. It means when you surrender to me while fulfilling your dharma, then that is the path of the highest liberation. Then you are forever delivered from all your sinful reactions, from all your pious and impious deeds. The question is being raised in this chapter that it seems that devotees suffer just like non-devotees. So what's the difference? Sometimes devotees seem to be suffering even more. Why is that? And Sukadev Goswami and our acharyas are explaining there's a difference between those who are sincerely on the path of devotional service, their suffering, and ordinary people. The modes of material nature are always influencing us in different ways. Arjuna asks in Bhagavad Gita that these passionate desires of lust and greed and envy and anger and arrogance and illusion, they're very strong. Even a person who's trying to control. Krishna says, if you just practice sincerely, ananyas chintayanto mam yejana parubhashate tesham nitya piyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. Just try your best, sincerely. I will preserve whatever little you have and I will compensate for what you lack. This is very much the essence of the Gita. Daivihesu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mamevamge prapadyante mayam eta tarantite. That material nature constituted of these three gunas is very difficult to overcome. But Krishna says, if you should take shelter of me, you can easily cross beyond. Taking shelter means to put Krishna in the center of our life. Sarvapadi vinirbhaktam takparat vena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktaruchyate. When we rise above these designations that are so much like knots deeply bonding our consciousness. We're thinking, I am this body. I am the thoughts of this mind. We're identifying with a community. We're identifying with a nation. We're identifying with a species. These are upadis. They're just temporary things. In the eyes of eternity, they only last for a moment. Yesterday was Shiva Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance day. And Srila Prabhupada, so often when he would speak about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, he would narrate the first meeting that he had on the rooftop of Ultadongi Junction Road at the first Gaudiya Math in Calcutta. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you are an intelligent young man. You should understand the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and in the English language take it to the world. Srila Prabhupada was a very devout follower of Mahatma Gandhi. For the pride and the freedom of India, he sacrificed a lot. If you listen to some of Prabhupada's lectures, it's incredible. He was going to get a college degree from a Scottish Church's college, one of the most prestigious colleges of the time in all of India. He did the studies, but he rejected the diploma because Gandhi said we should reject everything the British is giving. Like that. It's like delete button. We cannot cooperate. We cannot be dependent on their credentials. It was a brilliant plan. It worked too. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was not against these things. where he explained that all these are just very temporary situations. You're born in a particular body within a flash. When you think about history, especially the Vedas, it's incredible. You know, other countries and other places, history is, you know, maybe a couple thousand years or a few thousand years. But the Vedic histories are millions and millions of years. We're reading about what happens when Brahma's born on a lotus flower. Now, Brahma's about 50 years old, so that's about 1.5 trillion years ago. 1.5 trillion years ago. And we're reading exact details of what happens. And then about how he's creating all these different Prajapatis, and Narada Muni comes from his heart, and the Kumaras come from his mind, and Shiva comes from between his eyebrows, and so many other people are coming. So history is just, and that's just this little universe. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that same Brahma comes to visit Krishna in Dwarka. And the messenger at the door comes to Krishna and says, Brahma's here. He wants to see you. Now he's the number one power and servant in the entire universe. But Krishna knows how to humble everyone. Just with one sentence, he totally humbles Brahma. Krishna says, ask which Brahma? Now, in Brahma's 1.5 trillion years, nobody ever asked that question. So Brahma says, it's the four-headed Brahma. Okay, now Krishna knows exactly where he's identifying himself. He says, the four-headed Brahma? Okay. He's identifying himself with these four heads, which sees everything in all the four directions. So tell him to come in. And then Krishna calls for so many other Brahmas, who has so many more heads than him. 8 heads. 16, 32, 64... thousands. And they're all in Krishna's room. And they're all... was the seed of the Hare Krishna movement when Prabhupada was given that instruction. So when a devotee is put in a suffering condition, The difference is that when we suffer for the purpose of pleasing Krishna and serving Krishna, we're being purified. There's no residue of further implications of suffering if we just choose to remain within the principles and the integrity of our devotional service. It purifies us. But within the modes of nature, for a person who is not taking shelter in that way, through their suffering, they may, their pious or impious activities, they're getting a reaction. But by the way they react, they're sowing the seeds of other reactions. If we're in a suffering condition and it causes us to make offenses, to do something else sinful, then the seeds of that is going to come back on us. And even if we're pious in that suffering condition, then we get pious seeds. Abrahma bhuvana loka punarabhartanorjana mamupetya tukontya punarjanma navityate. But ultimately they all bring reactions because piety gets mixed by the modes of nature and we act impious. And sometimes when we get the results of impious activities, we again act impious, or sometimes we act pious, but it's all within this vicious cycle. But a devotee who's taking shelter, their happiness and their suffering is a personal arrangement of Krishna. It's not just the modes of nature. It's not just karma. It's Krishna. And another quality of a devotee in a suffering condition is in that situation, they humble themselves. They understand that they really have to take shelter of the Lord with their hearts. Janmaishwarya Shruti Shribir Edamanamada Puma Naibarhakyamada Tumbai Twam Akinshana Gocharam. Kunti Devi prays that Krishna, when one has too much beauty and knowledge and strength and high birth and fame and education, they become arrogant. They can't take shelter of you. They can't call out your holy name like a baby child calling out for mother at a time of need. So when Krishna takes away what we have, who we have, when Krishna takes away sometimes our health, our wealth, our social position, it's ultimately so that we really feel a deep need and facilitate where we really turn to Krishna for our shelter. And when Krishna gives us so many things, he may give us power, he may give us knowledge, he may give us strength. Taking shelter means to be grateful. In whatever situation comes, a devotee is blessed when we humbly receive it. Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vibhaga. Haridvagva purvir vidadam namaste jivet. So you book that sadaya bhag. When a devotee, even in difficult, painful situations, bows down with gratitude to the Lord, that person is naturally the heir to receive the highest liberation. So when we're successful, we humble ourselves. Krishna, you're so great that you're giving this to me. Krishna, you're so great, you're so kind that you're giving all this money or all this knowledge or all this fame or all this power to me. Let me use it as for the well-being of all beings, as you're the servant of the servant of your servants. And Krishna, you're taking everything away from me. With a grateful heart, we understand, but I still have you. And now I understand and realize that more than ever before. In this chapter, the next couple verses, Sukadeva Goswami, he addresses Parikshit as Bharat, because he's a descendant of the great King Bharat. And his grandfather is Maharaj Yudhisthira. And after Maharaj Yudhisthira performed the Aswamedha Yajna, what happened is Yudhisthira Maharaj approached Krishna with a similar question. That I've given my heart, my life, with my brothers, just to serve you and to please you, and we've done this Aswamedha Yajna only for your pleasure. But please tell me, myself and my brothers and my mother, we suffered so much. We were exiled, there were death threats, there were blasphemies, there were false propaganda, there were so many distresses in our life. And then why do you do that to your devotees? And one of the most famous verses of all times that Prabhupada loved to quote from the Srimad Bhagavatam 88th chapter is spoken by Krishna to Yudhisthira. This verse is tomorrow. But in case you're not coming tomorrow, I'm going to read it now. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Yasyaham Manugrinami Harishidhadhanam Shanai Tatodhanam Tyadyant Yasya Swajana Dukadukidam. The personality of God had said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth, then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way he suffers one distress after another. This is if Krishna especially favors. So we can understand why the worship of the devatas is so popular. This is a secret. It's so beautiful. And Srila Prabhupada, should I end or should I continue? If you don't leave, I'll continue for a few more minutes. This particular verse, and leading up to it, can have such a transformational understanding of how we perceive life, the world, and Krishna. Now it is our book distribution marathon. In December, on Moksha Ekadasi, Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. In the West, Christmas. Christmas means the advent of Lord Jesus Christ. So at that time, people are really charitable. They like to share with each other. They like to give gifts to each other. Many retail stores in Europe and America like half or more than half of the whole year of selling is in the Christmas season. People buy so much because they, and it's mostly to give to other people. It's a charitable time of the year. And because of that, people are just charitable. So the devotees in the service of Prabhupada saw people are the most inclined to buy Prabhupada's books. Because when they find out that this book is, you know, for a charity, they, yes, yes. At other time of the year, they say, I already have one. Even if they don't. But at Christmas time, you can't tell a lie. So they give, they buy. And that same time of the year in India is when Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita. So it's Gita Jayanti. So book distribution is a very... Srila Prabhupada is very happy. His devotional ecstasies are in his books. So I'm going to share something very personal now. Permission? The first thing I ever read in my whole life from Srila Prabhupada's books was this chapter from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it was in Mumbai. Not only in Mumbai, it was in South Mumbai. True story. As you know, some of you may have heard, but I left home when I was a teenager looking for truth, and I somehow or other crossed over Europe and the Middle East and was in the Himalayas. And then I came to Mumbai, actually for a Buddhist meditation course I came here. And I took the course. And afterward, because I was sitting for like 12 hours a day like this, for about 10 days or 2 weeks, so I decided to just take a walk. And I walked, and I came upon Cross Maidan. And there was a beautiful spiritual festival there. But I came during the day. There was only a few people there. At night, about 20,000 people came or more. But in the day, there was just like some couple dozen people walking around. And there was a book table. And I happened to see the Krishna book. And I didn't know who this person was on the book. I said, who is that? Because I had been carrying a little picture of Krishna around from when I first came to India. And I didn't know who he was. But having lived in the Himalayas, mostly with yogis and people like that, I had kind of matted hair and I had a really river-stained... white robes that were not white anymore. I only had one set of clothes. And I used to wash them in muddy rivers. So they were mud color. And they were kind of torn up. And I just had this one little wooden begging pot that somebody gave me. So there was an American devotee behind the book table. His name was Tushta Krishna Prabhu. He was really an effulgent person, and he looked at me, and I asked, you know, who is that on that book? And the first thing he replied was, do you speak English? I said, I speak English. He said, "Really, you speak English?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "I'm from Illinois, America." And he looked at me in total shock. He said, "You're American?" I said, "Yes." And then he asked me, "Are you a Shivite? Do you worship Shiva?" Because I guess, you know, I looked like that. I said, "Sometimes." I didn't really know what I was at that time. I was doing so many things. He said, so you worship Shiva? And I said, I didn't really say anything because I didn't know what I was supposed to say. So then he took the Krishna book, and he was about to give it to me, and I said, "But I don't have any money." So he said, "Well, you just read this chapter and bring it back." And he turned to this chapter. He especially opened it for me. He said, you sit down and read this." I said, "Definitely." So I sat down to read it. And you know the story about Brikasura. If I start telling the story, it might take time. But I'll tell it briefly. But before the story in Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada really deeply elaborates on the principles that we're discussing today. He's describing how we are not these temporary designations. We're all ultimately eternal souls. And he goes into great detail of why there's suffering in this world and why even a devotee of the Lord sometimes goes through so much suffering. And how it humbles us to take shelter of Krishna. And then when we're humbled to take shelter of Krishna, then even when Krishna blesses us with so much prosperity, we understand it with a humble and grateful heart how to use it. Whatever Krishna does is always good. And this faith is the basic foundation of Vaishnavism, that whatever Krishna does is good. And if we take shelter of Krishna, Krishna is going to bless us in the best way for us, especially. Because all the prosperity that we have is going to be gone in a flash. And all the sufferings that we have are going to be gone in a flash from the perspective of eternity. The only thing that really lasts is Krishna's love for us and our love for Krishna. Para upakara, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Bharata bhumite hoila manusya janma jara janma saradakakara para kara upakara. That he invited everyone from India to do the highest welfare for all living beings by giving this Krishna consciousness, giving this eternal understanding of our dormant love for Krishna. One of Srila Prabhupada's favorite verses, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Satya Kabunoi Sravanadi Sudichiti Kodiye Yudhoi. And when Prabhupada would be explaining this verse, he would emphasize that ecstatic love for Krishna is dormant within the heart of every living being. by associating with devotees, hearing about Krishna, and chanting Krishna's name, that love is awakened. Srila Prabhupada describes in this, in his Krishna book, this concept of yasya hamana grinnami harisheta tadam shanai. When Krishna takes away what we have, our social position, sometimes our wealth, our health, in that state, we're kind of hopeless. And then we seek something. And when we come in the association, Krishna at that time sends the association of his devotees. And in that association, we learn about Krishna. We learn about that foundational faith that Krishna is always good. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas at Katva, he chanted the prayer of the Avanti Brahman. The Avanti Brahman was kind of a bad person. But then somehow or other he lost everything. Thieves stole from him. People burned down his house. He lost everything he had. And even though he was so powerful and he had so much prestige and aristocracy, his family members turned against him. The society turned against him. People were abusing him. It was at that time that he turned to Krishna. And he became so happy. He became liberated. He became a Shiksha Guru for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he turned to Krishna with a humble heart. So Prabhupada is explaining about the nature of this world. About the nature of people who worship demigods for material purposes. He's explaining why there's suffering in this world for materialistic people, why because of karma, and why there's suffering for devotees to help to purify us, to humble us, to take shelter. And by the time Prabhupada gets to the story of Brihadasura, I was so transcendentally transformed reading about all this incredible information, because it really goes to the heart. It's not just some theoretical concepts. He's talking about why people suffer. And it's with such simple, understandable language, but with such a deep, profound philosophical purport. It was incredible. Sukadev Goswami tells the story of Brihadasura. He was a very bad person. But he was one time walking, and Narada Muni, he's the guru of Vyasadeva. He knows how to, let us say, create drama for the pastimes of the Lord. Because, you know, the scriptures, you know, when we read Mahabharata, Ramayana, Srimad Bhagavatam, these incredible scriptures, the drama lures us into the teachings. Otherwise, sometimes we fall asleep. So Narada Muni really knows how to, whatever he does is for the well-being of all living beings. Just like Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, whatever Krishna speaks to his devotee or to anyone that's recorded in the scriptures, it's not just for that person. What Krishna is speaking to Yudhisthira, yasya hamana gurinami harisheta danam shanai, is actually spoken to every living being for all time to come. Yudhisthira was transcendental. Arjuna was transcendental. Krishna spoke Gita and he's speaking this verse for you, for me. Out of his love, his compassion. So Narada Muni happens to be walking and Brihaspati asks him, I want to know from you. He offers his respects to Narada Muni because he knows Narada Muni will give him something if he offers respects. He said, there's three gods, Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwar. Which one will give me what I want the quickest? That's his question. Have any of you ever asked that question? Narada Muni said, Lord Shiva. He gives Brahma and Shiva, the two of them, they are the quickest to curse if you do something they don't like, and they're quickest to give blessings if you do something to please them. So, Lord Shiva, he will give the quickest. So, Brihaspati, he had a lot of material intelligence. He wanted to take every step possible to make sure he gets what he wants. So he went all the way to Kedarnath, which is high in the Himalayan mountains. Even today you can only go a few months a year, otherwise it's covered with snow. And you could drive almost all the way there. But at the time of Brihaspati, you had to walk there. So he went all the way to Kedarnath. And he began to perform an incredible tapasya. He understood that when you light the sacred fire, according to the particular deva that you're worshipping, that deva will receive what you're offering to the fire. So he invoked Lord Shiva in the sacrificial fire. And just like when we perform our fire sacrifices, we offer ghee and fresh organic grains and seeds, offerings of love. He took a knife and cut deeply into his own flesh and offered that flesh to Shiva in the fire. And it's not that you can get it back. When you put your flesh in fire, it burns, it's gone. He did that. Bigger and bigger slices of his flesh. He was literally tearing his whole body apart for 6 days. He was doing it all day for 6 days. And nothing happened. So he was so determined. He was chanting his mantras. He was calling for Shiva. He was offering Shiva, here, take my flesh. And that's because for a materialistic person, the body is very, very important. He was offering his body. And on the seventh day, because nothing happened, he was so frustrated. He took a hatchet. He took a bath in that kunj that's near Kedarnath, and with wet hair and wet body, he was about to cut off his own head in such a way that after he cut off his head, the head would fall in the fire. Because after the head comes off, you can't really offer it to him. He was systematic. With his head, he chanted the mantra. After he chanted the mantra, he was going to cut it, and the head was going to fall in the fire and burn. And at that point, Lord Shiva, out of compassion, he knew this person had evil motives, but he was compassionate. Lord Shiva appeared.
He actually came right out of the flames of the fire, the form of Mahadev. And Brakasura's his body's all chopped up. He's just at the verge of cutting off his head, and he sees Lord Shiva. And he offers his worship.
Lord Shiva says many things, but he said, I'm pleased with you. Don't commit suicide. And Srila Prabhupada, in Krishna book, he says, just even any one of us, if we have compassion, if we see somebody about to commit suicide, we don't wait for them to call to us. We immediately try to stop them. That's compassion. So Lord Shiva, out of his gentle compassion for all living beings, he appeared. He said, don't kill yourself. He said, actually, you didn't have to do all this. He said, for my Shiva Lingam, people just offer me some water and some leaves from the bilva tree or fruit from the bilva tree. That's all I want. You could have just done that. You didn't have to chop off your flesh and your head. But, you know, what do you want? He said, give me the benediction that anyone whose head I touch, that person will immediately die. Lord Shiva already promised he would give him whatever he wants. So Lord Shiva said, Om. And with that Om, he touched the body of Brakasura, and all his cut off parts of his body all became very healthy and strong and nice. And he said, now I have given you this benediction. And I'm sitting here in Cross Maiden, sitting on the grass reading this. Already the philosophy, Prabhupada, pages and pages of philosophy and teachings about the most essential concerns of life. Why are we suffering? How can we become happy? Why? How? Then I'm reading the story which is explaining it all. Srila Prabhupada explains, Brakasura wanted to test to see if he had this power. And he wanted to enjoy Parvati. That's very esoteric. To want to enjoy Parvati, Shiva's wife. He wanted to exploit her. But he couldn't do it in the presence of Shiva. So he wanted to kill Shiva. And then the Kshatriya way is, after you defeat somebody, then you can take everything that's theirs. So with his hand, as quick as he could, he reached to touch Shiva's head to kill him. This is a very difficult situation, because Lord Shiva gives his promise that whosoever head you touch will die. He can't break his promise. At the same time, he didn't want Parvati to be with his demon, and he didn't want to die either. So Shiva ran away. It's very transcendental. He ran away. But because Brakasura got such power from Shiva,
he could go wherever Shiva went. So Shiva went to different planets in the universe, and Vrikasura was right behind him. An expansion of Shiva is Durvasa Muni, and he had a similar experience. Sudarshan Chakra, wherever he went in the universe, Sudarshan Chakra was right behind him, and ultimately he went to Vishnu and Vaikuntha. Shiva did the same. He was going everywhere, and Prakasura was right behind him, ready to touch his head. And finally he goes to Svetadvip. Within this universe, it's the Vaikuntha planet. Where Kshirodakshaya Vishnu is laying in an ocean of milk. That's the place where the devatas chant Purusha Shukta to invoke the Lord to incarnate within this world. And Shiva's, and Lord Vishnu sees Shiva running away from Vrikasura. He knows the situation. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu, he's the dearmost devotee of the Lord. So Lord Vishnu, he takes the form of a little brahmachari. And he was just exactly the right type of brahmachari. He had like a little skin of some animal on his body, and he wore rudraksha beads. He didn't wear tulsi beads, because Vrikasura was a Shivite. So preaching according to time, place, and so Kaladesha Patra. He did what was effective. During book distribution marathon in the West, sometimes devotees would put on little wigs. Brahmacharis with shaved heads would put on wigs, would put on suit and tie, and go to airports and other places. And some people were complaining, why are they doing like this? And Prabhupada, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the story of Pratapa Rudra Maharaj, when he disguised himself to please Lord Chaitanya, he said, to please Krishna by showing compassion to others. He said, sometimes we have to adjust. And he was praising the devotees who were presenting themselves in such a way that people would open their hearts. He said, sometimes our devotees, to distribute these books and show compassion to people who are just completely, you know, wasting their lives, they dress like European and American ladies and gentlemen. And then people, they don't have fear. They accept. So Krishna, he was wearing rudraksha beads, and he was carrying a little pot, and he was a little brahmachari. And he was small, so he was like a little boy. So he looked pretty harmless. So Vrikasura sees him, and then he offered his respects to Vrika. Krishna is taking the form of a little, apparently like a little Shivite boy, brahmachari, and he's offering his respects to Vrika. Why would he respect him? He's trying to kill his devotee. Kaladesha Patra. He opened his person's heart. The little brahmachari, when he offered respect to Vrika, Vrika sees him, he trusts him. He said, what are you doing? I see you just running around chasing Lord Shiva. Why are you doing this? He said, because he told him all the reasons. I'm going to touch his head and kill him. Then I'll get what he has. And then I'll know that this benediction works, and I could do anything, anywhere. I could conquer all directions. And the little brahmachari says, oh, Shiva, he gives so many blessings. But if I were you, I would not trust him. After all, Daksha, his own father-in-law, cursed him. And he's the lord of all kinds of ghostly beings. And look at him. If you touch his head, if it doesn't work, everyone will laugh at you. You will be totally humiliated. Krishna says in Gita, for one who's been honored, dishonor is worse than death. He said, so I don't trust with Lord Shiva's benedictions. If it doesn't work, then you'll know that he lied to you. And then you could get even with him by killing him. But you won't know unless you test it. So just touch your own head to see if it works. Krishna was so sweet. As this little boy, he was speaking so respectfully. He got his trust. He was speaking very, very sweetly. And he was very logical. And he mesmerized Bricka. And before Bricka could even think about what he was doing, he touched his head. Srimad Bhagavatam says it was like a massive bolt of lightning crashing on his head, and it cracked in so many pieces, and he fell dead. And Vishnu told Shiva, you should be careful who you give his benedictions. But Krishna saved him. So I'm reading this thinking, it's very meaningful. It's very transforming. And then after I read it, you know, that my godbrother, I didn't know he was my godbrother at the time, but he saw I finished reading the chapter. And he very sternly he said to me, you see, even Shiva surrenders to Krishna. So if you're a devotee of Shiva, that means you should surrender to Krishna. And I looked up at him and I didn't say anything. I thought, yeah, this is really an incredible philosophy and an unbelievable story here, but believable, but incredible story. But these people seem quite fanatical. So I said, could I read more of this book before I make any decisions like this? And he said, yes, you just bring it, read as much as you like and then bring it back. And then I sat on the grass in Gras Maidan. I was reading, and while I was reading, Yamuna Devi was singing beautiful bhajans on the stage. She was all alone. There was no other devotees with her. She was just playing harmonium and singing into a microphone. And there was only like a few dozen people perhaps at that time just walking around the park looking to see what's happening. And her eyes were closed and she was chanting, I think, Bhaja Hure Mana Srinanda Nandana. And she was chanting Maha Mantra. And there was just such depth and devotion. It was a very deep experience. And that depth and devotion was what she received from Srila Prabhupada. And I wanted to, I really wanted that book. But the book was about this big. So I got the first volume. Prakasura is the second volume. And I was looking through it. And I went out to beg for money to try to get, but I didn't get enough. And after 2 weeks, the last day of the pandal, because I heard Prabhupada's lectures every morning, every evening, a devotee came up to Prabhupada and said that he really likes your Krishna book and he's been begging to get money for it, but he didn't get enough. And Prabhupada looked at me with such emotion and compassion that I was so interested in his book. He said, thank you very much. And then he gave me Krishna book. I was so bad at begging. I think, you know, in all 14 days I made like about 60 paisa or something. So I've never been very empowered in fundraising. But Srila Prabhupada is merciful. And that compassion was a deep seed that went into my heart. And I took Krishna book with me back to the Himalayas. But this chapter was the beginning of my study of Srila Prabhupada's books. And thank you very much. Thank you for clapping so nicely. But better than clapping is to study Srila Prabhupada's books. And especially this time of the year, to be enthusiastic to share these books with the whole world. Shall we have kirtan for a few minutes? Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine